What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Five Rounds. I'm your host, John Ramdean, alongside my pal, Robin Black, Chase Kaiser, running the board. What are we going to talk about? We got the UFC going down in Halifax, Nova Scotia, this Sunday night for UFC Fight Night, the main event, the heavyweights collide. Travis Brown taking on Derek Lewis. You spent some time... Xbox, so it was?
Yeah.
Xbox.
Halo Wars 2.
Know your enemy.
Yeah, they hired, they wanted to do some promotional stuff. And one of the possibilities, and they wanted to do it with Travis Brown, which is cool and good for him. He's a good guy.
They were hoping Ronda would be there.
Yeah, probably. But that's part of the deal. So they were like, somebody in there was like, do something different with analysis. And I ended up doing it. It was fun. He's a smart guy. But
did he feel guarded and sheltered? Because, again, if you go online, and I don't suggest anybody do this because it's all garbage.
Yeah,
but if you read some of the stuff that people say about Travis Brown and Ronda Rousey, it's like negative.
Yeah.
So if as an athlete, and this guy's got kids, like, oh, God,
I don't want my... He fights heavyweights with the extra weight of all this kind of stuff. You know, Derek Lewis... You've seen how hard that guy. You see how hard he hit Gabe Gonzaga.
Holy smokes!
You know what I mean? You got to go in there free of all that kind of stuff. It's different. There's no question. Like people.
What was the biggest takeaway when you sat and just buddy to buddy, martial artist to martial artist? Because he's still new to this game, right? Yeah. He's only been training
seven or eight years. Top 10 heavyweight, and he's been top 5 heavyweight. As a fighter, he loves the game. He loves training. He's like loves the life of being a combat athlete, and he loves fighting. And he's very interested in the details and the subtleties of fighting. So he loves the science of it too. So when we were talking about that, it was awesome. When we were talking about the job, sitting there doing a TV piece together or a web piece together, he was super fun having fun with everybody and interacting with them. But then when you chilled a little bit after, and I've seen this for a lot of people. I felt this from a lot of famous people. And I know it's easy to sit around and think, oh, well, fuck him. You know, or whatever word you want to use. I'm trying not to swear.
I like that word.
Yeah, it's a valuable word. It's a powerful word. It's got its value. But sometimes, you know, there's other words. Sometimes you seem dumber when you go to that right away. But it's real. I mean, it's 2017. This is real language with real people, right? As soon as you start censoring yourself too much, people can feel you're not having a real conversation. They want to have a real conversation with people.
I swear a lot. I drop F-bomb probably more than I think most people on the planet. But when I get home, I don't say that.
So that means you're capable of...
I don't say it in front of my wife. I don't say it in front of my kids. Just because... And not that I don't feel like I'm being authentic. Yeah. It's just a different version of me.
That's right. Yeah. So we know we're capable of doing that. But again, it's like, this isn't television. You know, we're not sitting around here on some old school television
network.
Nobody
wants it to be television.
Nobody wants it to be television. We're having a conversation. And the response we get from people when we talk about fighting or meander off into real things, which when I listen to a podcast or I watch a podcast, I like it when
they're
real
people. That's what you're
hoping for. Yeah, you know. But anyway, so Travis, this is something that I felt from other people that are exposed to, you know, famous athletes, famous musicians, people like that. The amount they never, so few of them, live without the weight of all of the negativity and hate on them. And I know that to a lot of people, they would, like I said, fuck them. A lot of people would sit there and go, well, they're rich now and, you know, they have all these things. And it's true, but life isn't about how much money you have. Life is about how happy you are. And
more money, more problems.
Yeah, that's right. I got 99 problems and people hating me is one. For some of these people, it shouldn't matter, but it's hard when it's a constant. You go out into the world and we have a number of currencies now. Time is a currency. So Travis Brown wants to train and he wants to have a life. Time is what he has a shortage of. He wants to get better in jiu-jitsu. He wants to become a better, you know, wrestler. He wants to spend more time with his coaches or his teammates, whatever. He wants to spend time with his significant other, whatever. So time is an issue. But interaction with other people is a currency too. How you interact with people, what you get out of meeting other people. And you know, so when you're hanging out and chatting with somebody like that, you see that most of their time they don't deal with that kind of stuff. But people think that guy, despite all the evidence to the contrary, and I believe even his former partner saying that you know, she had over made some statements that were untrue, and there was no evidence that he had ever hurt anybody. To this day, if this guy were to be crazy enough to look on YouTube underneath the thing we did together, people would be like, oh, man, he should beat his wife like that. Like, just negative, crazy, horrible shit. You know what I mean? Horrible stuff. And it never happened. Can you imagine going through your life? This never happened, according to everyone involved. And if your wife left you for Brad Pitt, you don't know what you might say. You don't know how you might lash out and then later go back and say, my wife never, you know, did these horrible things. Anyways, this is getting into some dark stuff.
Not really, because you're trying to understand a fighter that's trying to make his way in a heavyweight division. Yeah. He's a high-profile guy. But unfortunately, he can't go out into the real world. Like Ronda Rousey, she can't go out. No. She has to have escorts. Yep. Like she's wearing some sort of disguise. That's speaking of disguise. When you're at that level, we were in Montreal.
How do you disguise Travis Brown?
Yeah, exactly. But we were in Montreal for one of the GSP fights, and the night before. I can't remember who it was. A couple of us here were walking the streets of Montreal, and we see this group of guys. And I see Firas at the end, and then I see Christophe Madu. And I'm like, okay, well, Christophe is there, and Firas is part of this group. I'm like, where? And I see George wearing a disguise, wearing curly hair, and he's wearing these glasses and a hat.
Guy.
And I'm like, wow. That's what these guys have to do. Yeah. Because if he didn't do that, he'd be stopped every 10 feet. And I'm sure he wants that, but he...
No, he doesn't.
No, what I mean is he's accepted that. Yes. The fact that I'm a certain level of celebrity and people are drawn to me for a certain reason. But nobody wants to talk to me about regular things. No. It's always fighting. I'm fighting tomorrow. I fucking want to get this out of my mind now.
You're driving F-bombs again.
Oh, so but it's a reality. You make these Somebody's going to hurt me.
It's true. Again, when we think about it, a knee-jerk reaction is often like, oh, cry me a river, man. You got millions of dollars. Money, like, you get this twisted idea that money is the goal. Money isn't the goal. Having a life that you like is the goal.
But we're taught. Society teaches money's the goal.
Well, it's wrong. It's wrong. And anybody, you grab 1,000 millionaires and 900 will tell you they wish they spend more time with their family, you know?
At the end.
When they'll regret that they spent all that time doing that. But we only think about our knee-jerk reaction is to think about all the good things, but you don't think about Mike Tyson's life. When Mike Tyson was here, you know, all day, every
I've
day,
never seen anything
everywhere
like that
he goes
ever.
For the rest of his life, ever. Forever, he has no life. When he's in a room alone with some people, I mean,
people start pouring into the room.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not as if he just walks through room and people go, holy shit, it's Mike Tyson. As soon as he stops, somebody runs to another room. Oh my God, Mike Tyson's there! And next thing you know, a room that had 5 people now has 40 people in it.
It's true.
And everybody
and
wants
some
to
of them are texting and calling their friends.
Oh my God,
I've never seen anything like
that before. And I've had the chance to work with people of certain stature, whether it be rock stars or celebrities. But I've never seen anything like Mike Tyson before.
Yeah, and there aren't many in the world like that live that kind of life. But when you imagine it, you imagine, oh, wouldn't that be cool? Everyone wants to take their picture with me. But then for the rest of your life, never, ever, ever to have a normal life again. But so now Travis Brown met somebody that he fell in love with, and now his life changes forever. And whatever negativity seeps over, and who knows? So you have to deal with all of that. You shouldn't have to.
What's the best way to handle that? Do you handle it head on, saying these people are idiots? I'm not going to give them any. Yeah. There's no credence to that whatsoever. Yeah. Or do you just say, you know what? I'm not going to consume any of that.
That is definitely a way, but it may not be possible. If you're Ronda Rousey, it's not possible to not consume people talking about you because it's everywhere you go all the time. The best way, in my opinion, is to look into the back of the machine. Understand why this is. And it isn't just that these people are idiots. People are regular people. Like, people are people. And why would anybody say or do this? They feel like they have a real reason. Well, Ronda treated these people this way. So on some level, the idea that somebody was mean or rude to somebody, that is a horrible human trait to have, and your answer is to do that trait to them.
Yeah.
And now, and then an answer would be like, well, they did it first. But every war is somebody did it first. It doesn't make sense. But it's not the fault of the person. Specifically, they didn't choose to be somebody who said horrible things about somebody.
Right.
It happened through their domestication as a child and a teenager and so forth, the things they're exposed to and their misunderstanding of of language. But
you're not going to be able to fix that. The problem is, it's just like the thing you pointed out to me between micro and macro. And I guess the macro is everybody's fucked up.
Yeah.
We all have our own issues and insecurities and this and that. We can't fix that with most people. Yeah. It's our own responsibility to deal with our own stuff. And for all the people in the world that don't deal with their own stuff, they're going to push that out. That's going to be the narrative of the masses.
Yes. And so since it is going to be that, you can make it less powerful by understanding that it is not just somebody saying you're a horrible person, and whatever terrible thing they say about you. Isn't somebody sitting down and carefully forming an intelligent opinion on you based on the evidence? This is somebody having a knee-jerk reaction because of how they're feeling that day. They're tired or they're sick or they're angry or somebody did them wrong and you're rich and famous. So it happens. Once you understand that, it's like it is not a person trying to do anything to you. It's just the reaction of somebody in a complex world, and it's no big deal. If you can really understand that somebody saying that is meaningless and really, really mean it, then you're better off. If you're Rhonda and you just try to put on the shades and you try to put on the hood, and like, although 20 million people are simultaneously saying you're a horrible person out into the ether and Twitter and Facebook and whatever, millions and millions and millions, and you're a human being, and you're just going to try to ignore it, that's not going to work. You have to remove its power by understanding it's not real. We meandered into this conversation because that's once I spent enough time with Travis, he could not help but meander into that conversation gently. He didn't talk about how awful everybody was. He talked about, it's weird when you go through the world and people will read or hear one thing in passing and then they'll act like it's true forever.
Like the Black Zillions. There was a photo, Instagram photo of Travis Brown training at the Black Zillions. Yeah. So everybody just assumed because he tweeted this picture out that he had made the move from Edmund's place and he's like, it's California. Yeah. We're trying to get new looks. You go to most gyms, they'll tell you, go out, get different body types.
But it became the fact. Yeah. Treated as fact. I'll tell you another thing. Of course, a lot of people's reaction to this will be the truth as they know it. And the truth as they know it. And now, I almost got to go train with Edmund because I was going to California and Travis recommended to train. I thought, I'm going to go and have an open mind and train with this man. All of us, I've done it. The best coaches I've seen, other coaches, smart people have done it, react. Head movement, which people will write on Travis's Twitter for the rest of their life. Or, you're not getting hit with that right hand. There are moments of every corner man where he's not great. But it's not suddenly treated as, see, this is truth that you're useless and terrible, and then presented world over and over and over, so that if you're somebody who doesn't really study this stuff very much, all you hear is, this coach is terrible, look, he ruined Rhonda, look at how bad his cornering are. Some of those little bits of that are true, but then what about the other bits? The bits of the dozens and dozens or hundreds of people he's trained with who are highly intelligent, who swear he's good. And I'm not making excuses for a particular coach that I don't know. But one thing I can tell you is Travis Brown is highly intelligent. More intelligent than about fighting than 99.99 of the people who comment on him. And he's seen it up close and personal, and he has all the evidence, not just little tidbits of it.
He's been at Greg Jackson's. At Greg Jackson's with John Jones and Andre Arlovsky and Greg Jackson and Mike Winklejohn and all the plethora of the highest level fighters on the planet.
Exactly. So now he has all that knowledge. And he has the whole picture. So 100% of his experience with his coach, his 2% or 4% are, or 8% are bad coaching, which means 92% is good. Now, what the audience sees or chooses to see or is presented is only that 8%.
Because he's under a microscope. Exactly. Edmund's under a microscope.
So that's 100% of their observation, which means he's an idiot.
Yeah.
But Travis knows that's only 8%. Now, not only does he have that, and he has good coaches to compare it to, but he also is buried under the weight of the whole world ridiculing him for working with this man, and he still works with him. Is he an idiot? Your answer, many people's answers will be yes, he is.
Right.
My answer is he has more information than the 99.999% of people who draw these conclusions. I was talking to him and talking to his other coach, the wrestler. It'll come to me. I briefly lost. He is. It'll come to me.
Yeah.
Who is very intelligent, and it's a name thing. And I don't mean to be disrespectful that I've briefly forgotten his name, and very intelligent. And I enjoyed chatting with him a great deal. And I was chatting to both of them, and I said, you know, I'm off to L.A. I'm doing Brendan Schaub's show in a couple of days, and I wanted to do some boxing. And Travis, knowing full well what the opinion of the world is, knowing full well that he's got an uphill push to even have this conversation and that people have a preconceived idea, he said, you should train with Edmund. He'll be around. And I thought about it, and I thought, yeah, I'd like to. I'd like to see
for yourself.
Instead of, you know, and trust me, I have got into the snowball of it going and said, this guy's an idiot, with the tiny piece of information that I have. And then I thought, no, just because you've done that doesn't mean you have to build a wall around that opinion. Open your mind up to it and go find out for yourself. So I said, yeah, I'd like to. And he said, did some checking. He's not there. And I said, does he have a young guy? And I thought about going and training with somebody else. And I thought, no, I want to meet this man. And I want to train with this man. I want to train with him with an open, real, true open mind. Because if you just saw one thing, or you saw six things that represent almost none of it, you don't know anything about Edmund. You really don't. And Travis does and deals with all the shit for being with him and still says to himself, this man's knowledge and what he's given me is worth dealing with mountains of shit always from people, and I'm still going to do it. What does that tell you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he knows.
But it also, it feels like that's a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure for
Travis Brown to go and perform because of all these things. His next assignment, as we pointed out, coming up this Sunday against Derek Lewis. Derek Lewis on a roll right now. This guy hasn't lost since 2015, winner of five straight, including, as you pointed out, the TKO or the knockout victory over Gabe Gonzaga, split decision win over Roy Nelson, and a knockout victory in his last fight against Shamil Abdulrahimov. I want to talk about the micro and macro.
Okay.
Because you talk about that, how the micro now doesn't seem to be important, that the idea is just a bigger picture of fighting. But Derek Lewis, for example, I think he's only a blue belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Aren't those the important details? Mm-hmm. If you're a guy like Travis Brown, and again, I don't know if he has a rank in jiu-jitsu, but let's just say it's Gabriel Gonzaga, for example.
Yeah.
Gabriel Gonzaga is a jiu-jitsu guy, black belt in jiu-jitsu. Isn't it important to have those micro details, the idea of micro, when you know that your guy doesn't have the details that you have?
Yeah, but I don't think that is micro. I think so micro being the small details and macro being the big picture. Mm-hmm. Within each thing, there's the big picture and the small details, and everything works that way.
So when
Jacare goes to do a Kimura on me, he is looking at way less and seeing way more.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
He is thinking about way less and knowing way more. Because
he knows all the different paths out of that, though.
So let's say he's on your head and he has got your wrist and he's got you up here.
Yeah.
To him, it is bring it to my sternum and turn it to the side.
Yep.
But let's say lock it up, turn my wrist this way, but pull it into my body and then rotate this way using my whole body. Let's say it's three or four steps.
Yeah.
Within each of those three or four steps are thousands of details that now have, it's called chunking. Now he has chunked those into just that.
Yeah.
So when he says, you know, get the grip.
All those details are automatic.
Yes.
Though.
So it has become macro.
Right.
Grab the arm, turn it that way.
But
the micro was understand the pressure, understand that. Each of those four steps used to be 10 details or 20 details.
Okay.
They became sort of just in his blood. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's part of his skin now.
So it's one thing. So for
Tim Boach, trying to escape that, I have to escape this.
Exactly. Okay. And Tim Boach has 20 things he has to deal with to escape it.
But he doesn't have all the details I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Well, you're not a world jiu-jitsu champion, so you're going to try to do this, but he's trapping you.
So these are topics we've discussed for a long time, and it's interesting that this one book that I'm reading about a guy who was a chess master who became a martial artist, Josh Watkins. And he was talking about the first time somebody threw him So he was a martial artist, but with weaknesses in his game. And this guy who was a high-level judo guy threw him through the air. Grab this, overhook here, throw the leg up, and drive with this. Mm. And he said to him, just a confusing spiderweb non-understanding.
Yeah.
And then he asked the guy to teach it to him, and it was five steps. Put the foot here, turn the hip there, do that. But then when he tried to do each of those five steps, it had 50 details. And that's any kind of learning. That's any kind – and fighting applies exactly the same way. If the macro – the micro would be, you know, the small and this is a very flexible term,
sure,
by the way.
Sure.
Very flexible term.
Big picture, small picture. But there's a big picture in the small picture.
And when you find the one thing, it's a Kimura. Now, that to Jacare is a big picture. But defending it to Tim Boach is a complex thing.
Yes.
It's simple to Jacare, and it's complicated to Tim Boach.
Exactly.
So, yes, if we can get there. But it's the trouble with any of these ideas and any of these concepts is they're more than they seem, and they're less than they seem.
What a way to confuse us all.
I know. It's true, though, and it becomes more confusing. And I was saying this on my Ask Robin Black podcast the other day. We go, and it's the same thing, this broad concept, specific concept, broad concept, specific concept. You got a broad concept, I have to throw the guy in the air. You break it down into six specific concepts.
Sure.
It's these six steps. Each one of them has seven
yep.
steps. So it goes big, small, big, small to really understand it. And it all begins with fundamentals. If we don't have those, we can't do any of this exploring. Mm-hmm. So any area where it's easy for you and hard for him is great. So for Travis Brown, that is, this guy doesn't know how to do this. He's a blue belt.
Sure.
But then that's not really true because on some level, his answer, that one thing type of answer, Travis Brown is doing this, all I need to do is this. So there's often one answer. Then the guy never learns the complicated thing. He learns the one micro choice or the one macro choice, get my hip out.
Okay.
Travis Brown is using, I want this, pull this. This guy's so big and strong, sometimes you supersede it. Travis Brown's best, this guy's weakness in theory is on the ground, except for when we've seen him on the ground, he reverses guys with things that don't work for other people.
Right.
He's athletic,
but they
smart.
Those guys, maybe his opponents, don't have the answers.
Yes.
So once he's facing somebody, I put my hands, just stand up.
Yeah.
Well, you do that against Jacare, put your hands there.
Your neck is gone.
Your
neck's
trapped.
Which is why it becomes contextual. So when we going in, we weren't sure. We thought Durandamy and Holly Holm would be a very close fight, but the missing information was.
Was it not?
But we never saw Durandamy fight somebody like on the level.
Sure.
So you're like, you need context. And when I showed Travis some stuff with Derek Lewis, he said exactly what you're saying. He's like, that guy is doing a lot of things wrong, meaning the opponent. This guy is making a lot of fundamental mistakes that Brown wouldn't make.
Mm-hmm.
But Brown on top of him is good, for sure. Although you've seen this guy with simple principles, a straight arm and moving your hip a particular way, exploding at the right time. Derek Lewis has made some good choices, but not against somebody like Travis Brown. We know he couldn't do it against Verdum. Could he do it against Brown? I don't think so. But even better, we've seen him not really have much of a really good success out in the field without pressuring forward. So if I'm Brown, I'm circular, never get pressured forward, let him get tired, and then pick him apart outside. Mm-hmm. If you get a chance to put him down, we'll be on top and we'll be heavy. There's lots of ways Travis Brown can win this fight.
We're going to talk about some of the other cool fights that are going down. I know there's some people that might complain. Some of the things I've read online... The Canadian fans, and not just Canadian fans, but mixed martial arts fans in general, feel that Canada kind of gets hosed.
Yeah.
When we look at some of the fight cards, it feels like it's an afterthought for the UFC because you look at UFC 205, huge fight card. You look at UFC 207, huge fight card. UFC 206 on paper, and that's the problem. Fights don't take place on paper.
I know.
Because if you look at UFC 206,
so
it's arguably the best card of the year thus far. When you think about Max Holloway doing what he did to Anthony Pettis and Cowboy Cerrone kicking Matt Brown's head off and Du Ho Choi and Cub Swanson literally delivering the best fight I've ever seen since Robbie Lawler and Rory McDonald did battle for the second time.
It too.
It's simply incredible. And you look at some of the other cool stories and all the fights that took place. This is exactly what fight fans were looking for. Mm-hmm. But you look at this fight night in Halifax, you have Travis Brown and Derek Lewis. Now, I know things were supposed to be Junior DeSantos and Stefan Struve. Things happen. You have Johnny Hendricks, the former welterweight champion, taking on Hector Lombard. Our boy Elias. And I've rhymed out the card before. But is there anything, when you look at this fight card, that really stands out to you? That's like, oh, God, I need to see this because they have new technology. This is the future of mixed martial arts.
I want to see Eamon fight, but we have called his fights, and we have seen him fight, and we know what he can do. I'm hoping if I got to tell the story of how it's going to look and be right, is that he'd be patient, smart, surgical. The fight would get worse for his opponent every couple of minutes as Eamon absorbed a little more knowledge and took him out in the second or the third and really show you, hey, I'm on another level of skill and execution. So I'm excited to see Eamon fight. You know how hard he's worked for so many years, and he's been working hard to be more evolved. And I don't just mean it in the general way, oh, this guy is a good wrestler and boxer and whatever. Just a more evolved in how he thinks and how he learns and how he performs.
And I don't know, it's his teammate, but GSP, when we spent some time with him, he could not stop talking about how good Eamon is. Now, again, I know it's the younger brother of his coach, but he could have talked about anybody from the TriStar gym that, you know, is emerging. But he's like, this guy is very, very, very good.
It's cool to see Eamon lead that. There's two others that are with him, and they're like their own crew, Louie and Mandel. Yeah. And Mandel had his first fight on the same night as my last fight. Yeah. And he is really fun to watch. And I was watching them, and we were in the gym for a few hours for us, and I said, they fight very differently. But there's something that ties them together, and it is how they understand the relationship of all their parts of their body compared to the relationship of all the parts of your body. And at first, it's like, if I can get your hip low down only 3 or 4 years ago, I got to get to your hips. Where's my body compared to your hips? Or I need an underhook. Where's that? Very big, again, macro stuff now. It was micro at the time, but now it's macro.
But because of that, one of the reasons why, it's something they've preached to us. Yeah. Skill. Develop all the skills on the root. And eventually, when you get to the, as you pointed out, the macro, you'll have all that.
What happens when you deal with the reality of skill development and being in the environment of the reality of fighting is you develop that feel and sensitivity, and it's real. You can see it, and it is an understanding of all of the points of your body. And where they are in relationship to all the points of your opponents. And they wouldn't all describe it this way either. It's a way now as somebody who, and you do start to see bigger picture when you move from fighting to examining fighting from a third person perspective is, and the relationship to everywhere you are. And everything that moves changes everything. So small feints change the entire relationship between the points of our body. And they understand that and they manipulate that in really, really cool ways. And so Eamon will come out and be the first of that crew of three. But I'm really excited to see all of them fight. And they're all different, have different personalities, and they all have different sort of favorite skills and stuff. We've called Louis' fights. We've called Mandel's fights, and he fought on the card with me, and we've called Eamon's fights. And they all have that connection to how they fight, but they're all a little different. And however people judge.
And they've had tough fights. That's what I love.
Yeah. And not at first. They started low, which is smart.
Yeah.
Now you can't do that. Guys got to be – there are no fights if you want to take the tough ones now.
Tony Laramie showed us against Kevin Lee, the younger brother of
– Keith Lee.
Keith Lee, the younger brother of UFC lightweight Kevin Lee. Yeah. In their debut, these guys all train with UFC fighters.
Undefeated amateur guys training with UFC fighters. They both believed they would win. Only one will. But these guys, so whatever people's opinion, people in the know's opinion is of TriStar, and there are varying opinions out there when you get a couple beers and some coaches and stuff.
I'm not going to candy coat it. We go out in the world and we hear, because Firas is so successful, I'm sure if you go to Ireland, there'll be coaches that talk shit about John Kavanaugh, and you go to California, I'm sure there's people talking shit about Eric Del Fiero, but we've heard people talk smack about Firas. Yeah. But the reality is that the TriStar facility is it's open door. If you wherever you're coming from, you're coming from South Africa, you're coming from Ireland, you're coming from wherever, it's like, we'll come and we'll train you. That doesn't mean, even though it's his head coach, I haven't had a chance to work with you fully.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is when you are the best or the most successful, yeah. they'll always be. I've heard people who have trained one single UFC fighter and no other fighters ever talk shit about Frost. You know what? Like, what's he ever really done? Fuck. I mean, but people are like that with the best or the most successful always. So it's kind of irrelevant. And trust me, Faraz doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, I know he doesn't.
And on the other hand, despite whatever, first of all, yes, George St. Pierre, Rory, there's plenty of examples, but these will be the three that you can honestly judge. The reality of building fighters from the ground up will be Eamon, Louis, and Mandel. And they're brilliant. And they are brilliant. And they're driven and they're focused and they've helped each other. And if you are ever going to really judge the legacy of TriStar, it's gonna be these
guys.
Three. That's the only
homegrown.
That's the only fair way to judge when from day one they put their trust in their coach and really all develop together. And I guess fair, George is always gonna be your legacy, and George is coming back probably.
Yeah.
And Rory. So there are plenty of legacy things there. But to grow somebody from child to maturity as a fighter, it's those three. And we get to see Eamon do it first.
One of the fighters I want to talk about, an East Coast guy, huge pop. I've been hearing his name for a long time, Gavin Tucker. When is he going to go to the UFC? There's a kind of, I don't know if it's a rivalry, but it's a healthy, yeah. I guess, competition mm-hmm. on the East Coast, Titan MMA and yep. Fit Plus. Gavin Tucker, what can you tell us? Can you tell us anything about this guy that would be interesting for fans? Is this the next Canadian yeah. people need to keep their eye on?
He took tough fights too.
And, Sam Cecilia in his
yeah.
first fight.
Yeah, exactly. Sam Cecilia hits really hard, and he got better and better at the blue chip principles of cage fighting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He added wrestling and mobility based around wrestling. He's a little old school. But they also built him according to his strengths, which was being in balance and connected to the ground to deliver power. So that is, as he was coming up looking better every fight, and he really was, it was because they were building him around his strengths. Duho Choi assessed and analyzed and executed him based on those strengths, though. You know,
yeah,
we've got this guy really planted on the ground. We're going to change some things, but we got him planted on the ground because when he is, he knocks fools out. And so Choi Duho, as he's called in Korea, Duho Choi, as we call him, had that thing figured out right away. And Gavin can go learn from that, although Cecilia will have changed too. But Gavin took tough fights. It's hard to say some of these guys. Gavin's very, very good.
And he's very intelligent. Yeah. I had a chance to talk to him when you were in Los Angeles and Vegas, and he just has a really mm-hmm. good understanding. The job is to be technical.
Yeah.
We all understand that. I'm here to fight smart. He's like, but I'm from the East Coast.
Yeah.
If it comes down yeah. to who's tougher,
I like that. Yeah.
We're going to play yeah. that game. And I
like
just
that.
Love that mentality yeah. because the idea is, yes, you know what? We're going to be smooth and
yeah.
we're going to be fluid and we're going to be flowy. But yeah. if you tag me and I have to throw yeah. down, I can do that too.
Yeah. And my question is, when I say what I'm excited to see is these guys who we called well-rounded a few years back, that thing is dated now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't know where he has grown to, and it'll be interesting to see, but I sure do also love that. What he's saying is there'll come moments in a fight or entire fights where I find myself actually slightly less skilled and
right,
technical
right, right,
than this
right.
guy. And I'm still going to win many of those fights. And that's really powerful.
Cool.
I like that thinking. Because what's the other option? Oh, shit, he's better than me.
Well, I guess I'll get him next time.
Yeah.
No, he's going to go in and win those fights. Because guys win those fights. Somebody is, 10% slicker than you in this area, and he's got you a little bit hurt in this area. And in some of the exchanges that normally you do get your quality training partners back, he actually gets yours. And I'm still winning.
I
like that. That's cool. And he has fought in Halifax plenty, but this is different for sure. It'll be exciting.
So
I hope he embraces it.
Before the event that goes down, UFC Fight Night happens on Sunday in Halifax, Bellator goes down on Saturday night, the main event. We've talked about it through the last couple of weeks. Fedor Emelianenko taking on Matt Mitrione. But what a sensational card. You have the former Strikeforce champion and UFC veteran Josh Thompson taking on Patricky Pitbull Freite. Czech Congo taking on Ole Thompson, who is part of KSW, and the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And Josh Koscheck taking on Maurizio Alonso. A solid card from the Bellator organization. One with some big names and some interesting fights that are going to present sent some interesting questions. Where's Fedor in 2017?
Yes, that will be very interesting. I hope he's looking good, you know.
But we like Matt Mitrione.
Yeah, for sure, which is – it ends up being a great fight. Mitrione's very, very athletic, and he'll come at Fedor hard, fast, but we'll see. Saturday night – No UFC with this kind of card.
Nailed it.
In the habit of watching fights on Saturday night, and then Fedor. Like, what are you doing Saturday?
Their numbers.
Like, what are you doing live Saturday? Yeah. Of course you're watching this. Yeah. This is when you see, although there aren't that many openings.
Should the UFC be scared when you think about the Tito Ortiz, Chael Sonnen numbers, and the following week, Melvin Gallard and Njukawani's numbers, and now this on a Saturday night? Should the UFC be concerned?
I think if you are the guys who think about those kinds of things at the UFC, the big thing you look at here, who are the three biggest names on this card? Who are they?
Fedor.
Yeah.
Matt Mitrione, would he be the big
Koscheck.
Name? Koscheck. Chuck Congo, Josh Thompson.
Josh Thompson, Koscheck, and Fedor. They're all in their last couple fights.
Yeah, right.
So then they got to either bring up some young guys.
Which they are.
I mean, but Michael Chandler and Ben Henderson... And who else you got? Oh, Paul Daly. Who else you got that you really have to watch?
Rory,
yeah.
Douglas
Rory,
Lima.
Actually, against
Andre
Paul
Koreshkov,
Daly.
Michael Venom Page.
Yeah.
You know, when you look, the fact is things are emerging.
Yeah,
you have
actually,
Phil Davis there. You have Tito there.
Yeah, I forgot about
Tito's
Page.
Retired,
Page, you people do want to watch. Rory versus Paul Daly is a great one. It's a better fight. It's a better... You would be more worried if you are somebody who is analyzing these things, whoever the bean counters who kind of look at these and make projections and stuff. Fedor is awesome. A lot of people watch him, but how old is he?
Yeah.
But Rory and Paul Daly, you look at that and you're like, geez, these guys, like, you know, they could fight a bunch more times over the next few years. They're in England. You know, not that ever anybody really can. You eventually lose hope for somebody winning or losing.
Sure.
If you are
I just want to see
Scott
a fight.
Coker or Dana White or Sean Shelby or any of these guys, because your heart's broken 50% of the time. So you can't do it. I sure hope Paul Daly wins. Like, you can't do it. The 50% or more of the time you get your heart broken, so eventually you stop thinking that way. But Paul Daly, you know, beating Rory in England, all of a sudden England is like...
Hotbed.
About Bellator. Or Rory going in there and assassinating him, and then everybody going, all right, this guy. So that one to me carries more future possibilities. This one is sort of like, oh shit, thank God Saturday night there's good fights. You know what I mean? Josh Koscheck, how many times? Is he 40, 39, 40, 41? I mean, he's not going to fight a lot more times. He said about BJ Penn, he was like, you should come to Bellator, you'll get easier fights. Him and Thompson went to Bellator saying, I wouldn't mind fighting some more. Can you pay me more to fight lower level guys? And Scott Coker said yes, because it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not that many fights left for these guys. And if there are, they're not going to fight big names, you know?
So. And that's it for us. Another show in the books. Got to thank my main man, Robin Black, Chase Kaiser, and more importantly, you guys for tuning in. Next week, all the fallout from the Bellator show and the show in Halifax. And then we're looking forward to UFC 209, the welterweight championship up for grabs. Alistair Overeem taking on Mark Hunt. Khabib and Tony Ferguson, that's the interim title, right? Oh, my God. Anyway, it's going to be a hell of a fight. That's it for us. We'll see you next week.